Hello, I'm Phil Minot. It's that time of the week again when we all get together to celebrate all things cycling. So, if you're ready, it's time to go.
Behind the Bike Shed.
Coming up today, how getting on your bike can help charity. We talk to a trustee of Helping Rhinos. Also, engineering and cycling. Have two things ever been such good bedfellows? Well, to help us discuss that, we're joined by an expert in that field. And our guest on a bike this week is someone who used to head up the police force here in Cambridgeshire.
Behind the Bike Shed with Phil Minot on Cambridge 105 Radio.
We're Zooming again this week, in line with current Cambridge 105 radio policy. So patiently waiting for me in their bike sheds, various bike sheds, I'm delighted to say that zooming in from behind their bike sheds this week, we have Stuart Clark, who's a Cambridge-based, internationally respected cyber expert. And more importantly for us, he's also a very keen cyclist. He's also helping to save an endangered species, basically by riding his bicycle. Jinxink Ledger is an engineering consultant focusing on heritage and industrial engineering, and this bit you really won't like about her. She also happens to own an original Lotus bike as ridden by Sir Chris Bourbon during one of his record attempts. And Keith Moore, who of course is a Behind the Bike Shed regular, former pro football player turned pro cyclist. So, Stuart, thank you for joining us. Now, I think we're all intrigued to know how and why you've ended up as a trustee of Helping Rhinos. Here you are, a cyclist in Cambridge. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, that's a good question. It was actually bikes that brought me to the charity. I went on a safari a long time ago, and seeing a rhino in the wild, it's quite an amazing thing to see. They're very prehistoric. They do look a little bit like dinosaurs. And I was kind of motivated to see what I could do to help this species that's critically endangered. And being a passionate cyclist, I initially came up with the idea of creating virtual cycling rides on the well-known platforms like Zwift and Sufferfest, and using those rides to raise awareness and raise money. So I approached one of the largest UK charities in this space, and I guess the rest is history.
So you've explained how you first got involved with your bicycle. So how does the cycling fit in now? Because you do lots of traveling from work, don't you? So I'm guessing there's probably some cycle trips as well. You're sort of sneaking on the end of these business trips.
I do, yeah. I mean, up until current climate, I did travel quite a bit with work. So I have been lucky enough to ride in some pretty luxurious places. I always tag an extra day on. And I've used that as a platform to, I guess, raise awareness, but also raise money. Last year, I set myself a 12 different challenges, one a month, to try and raise money and raise awareness, really. And they were a variety of challenges, a lot of them cycling related, a lot of them very hard, and a lot of them I won't do again.
So what were some of those challenges then?
I guess the highlight for me, I did the Ort route in Norway, which no longer runs, actually. It was the last edition of the Ort route Norway. That was a three-day race around Stavanger in Norway, through the fjords. It was incredibly hard, but it was an incredibly amazing place to ride. And I guess the highlight for me of that trip was we did a climb called Liesbottom, which for me is, I've been lucky enough to cycle in the Alps, the Pyrenees, Italy, and many others. And it's the best climb I've ever done. It goes from 0 meters above sea level to roughly 1,100 meters above sea level. So you're climbing literally from the dock on the fjords through a tunnel, and then you're straight up for 10 kilometers. So it's pretty steep, but the switchbacks are amazing. So that was definitely a highlight. And then I guess the other thing, which I guess a sustained challenge, I tried to do something local. The Cambridge Time Trials, which run every Thursday evening. I had a crack at trying to, on my road bike, sadly not a time trial bike, but I had a crack at trying to win the points league in the road bike competition, which thankfully I was successful for, and I guess I get to keep that this year because there hasn't been any competitions. So
no, I'd say we had Kate Sanders from the Cambridge Cycling Club has joined us last week, and she was explaining there was obviously no time trials or anything happening, so which is a bit unfortunate really, isn't it, for everybody. I guess you're not traveling either much at the moment, are you?
No, I haven't been out of the country since February, which is nice. I could get used to it.
Yeah. You can only say that if you travel around the world like you do, can't you? So going back to the Rhino and helping rhinos now, but you'll have somebody most people who've followed cycling for a long time, a name people would know, haven't you, in your contact book, who's also a patron of Helping Rhinos.
We do. The voice of cycling, Phil Liggett, is an incredibly active member in the charity. And I guess one of the challenges last year, I got to ride with Phil Liggett. It was in South Africa. It was a extreme mountain bike event. And Phil rode the last part of that ride, which was through a game reserve in South Africa. The game reserve is famous for way back over 100 years ago for bringing rhinos back from the brink of extinction, even 100 years ago. And we had the opportunity to cycle on mountain bikes through that game reserve up a pretty steep climb. And I rode side by side with Phil up that climb, actually. He was on an electronic bike, though, so he was, I guess, cheating in a way. But
No, he's royalty. He's allowed to do that.
He
can do what he wants in my book, Phil Liggett. Stuart, why should people, you know, we're in the middle of a crisis, a global crisis. Why should people be worrying about rhinos?
Yeah, it's a good question. And it's a question that comes up every day. Because rhinos are in Africa, they're in Asia, do we really care? The reality is that there's a lot of different underlying reasons of why we really should care. And actually the COVID pandemic has exposed those in a very raw manner. First and foremost, rhinos are poached for their horns because there's a belief in some parts of the world that those horns can cure cancer, they're an aphrodisiac, they can do everything. Those horns are fingernails. They're exactly the same as your fingernails. They're completely scientifically useless. But that belief has driven criminal activity, and wildlife crimes are now the fourth largest crime in the world. And they fuel human trafficking, they fuel and they fund terrorism. So that's a very real issue. But the other underlying issue is actually interfering with wildlife is having long-term, quite devastating effects on the planet, the ecosystem that we all enjoy today. And we're seeing that with COVID-19. Wildlife markets, wet markets are cited as being the source of this disease. And that mistreatment of nature, sadly, is now front and center for every single one of us in the world. It's destroyed the economy. It's had a very devastating effect on thousands of families around the world. So while rhinos are just one species, I think on the whole, we have to take a long reflective look at ourselves and say, how do we actually restore the balance? Because this is not going to be the last disease if we continue to behave the way that we have behaved over the last 50 years.
I'm going to cut you in there because it's, you know, nothing personal. Getting a little bit depressing. There is a little bit though, isn't there? I mean, there is a blip of good news, shall we say.
There is. I mean, the rhino numbers have been recovering for the last few years, which is really positive. Poaching numbers are down. But actually, in the current COVID crisis, they're down considerably. In the months of April and March, there's been little relative to past years in terms of poaching incidents. So that's a positive. We're cautiously optimistic, but we are obviously acutely aware that because of lockdown, it's impossible to get the products out of the country anyway. So we have to be on full guard. But yes, there's certainly positives. The awareness and I think that all the good work that people are doing is starting to pay dividends now. And I think if we keep it up, we'll suddenly start to turn the corner.
I'm going to bring Jinx in on here at the moment, if you don't mind, Jinx. Stuart's been chatting about Africa. I've only been to Africa a couple of times, but the one thing I noticed, and you can't help but notice when you go to Africa, are the number of bicycles which are being used for, literally, they are working tools. They are heaped up like we would heap up a white, a man in his van, courier van. a bicycle looks very simple, doesn't it? Why does that work? Why are they so sturdy?
Ultimately, you're talking about stiffness. The whole frame, the stiffer the frame is, the more load it can carry. So if you look at the Mail Star, or indeed you look at the Molten that's in the picture that sort of advertise this program, it's all about the stiffness. And the stiffer the bike frame, the more load you can carry, the more useful it is. But, you know, the whole story around bicycles are just more than a physical structure. They're about emancipation. They're about freeing people up to do lots of things. And I don't think you know this, but my dad is actually Mauritian, which is in Africa. It's a small island just off Madagascar. And bicycles are a big thing there. They're a huge thing because it was an affordable way of transporting yourself around. And like you say, I have pictures of sort of my ancestors, so generations before me, loading up, and it's huge. Lots of sugarcane, you know, sort of 6 foot wide on either side of the bike. And it's that freedom at such a small amount of cost that it gives you that actually is where the bicycle wins out, I think.
So, I mean, you are right, because there's actually a charity based in Cambridge. You must get them on the programme, and they specialise in sending bicycles out to Africa to basically bring people out of poverty. I mean, it's almost like a key to set your business up. But the thing is, you know, we often hear, particularly cyclists, it's almost become a myth, isn't it, that the bicycles are the most efficient form of transport. Would you agree with that, Jinx?
Yes, I think I would. I mean, ultimately, other than the actual production of the bike, there isn't any sort of pollution that comes out of using it. And it's kind of down to you and what's going on. There are more efficient bikes than others. Like I say, going back to the stiffness of the frame, if the frame's all wobbly, you're spending a lot of energy wobbling your frame rather than propelling yourself forward. But yeah, ultimately, you know, that Big Mac and fries you eat at lunchtime gets converted into you being able to cycle to the pub in the evening. So, yeah, that seems a pretty efficient way of being to me.
You just mentioned pub, and actually Keith just woke up. Don't worry, Keith, we'll include you in the next part of the programme, I promise.
I'm just here.
Yeah, you're like the prop shaft in a mine, aren't you? We'll miss you when you're gone. We're going to carry on this conversation later in the programme, but before that, coming up, we get to meet this week's guest on a bike, and they are going to play
Spin That Wheel. Behind the Bike Shed with Phil Minot on Cambridge 105 Radio. Behind the Bike Shed with Phil Minot on Cambridge 105 Radio.
This is possibly the closest we're ever going to get to a royal appointment on Behind the Bike Shed here on Cambridge 105. I'm delighted found time to join us is the Lord Lieutenant of Cambridgeshire, Julie Spence. Julie, thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
How does a Lord Lieutenant operate during lockdown?
A lot of Zoom and Teams meetings, and actually a lot of writing and emails, because clearly within the lockdown, we've had the Queen's Award for Enterprise that have actually been announced, and we've had 8 fantastic companies within the whole of Cambridgeshire that have been awarded.
Wow.
So I was connecting with those.
So how are you going to present the plaque to which Her Majesty, you present on behalf of Her Majesty, Queen Elizabeth? How's that going to happen?
Well, we're going to have to wait till after lockdown. And actually, the one strange thing this year is that the factory that makes the really fabulous vases that they all get in blue glass is currently locked down. So we actually haven't got anything to award yet. So it'll no doubt happen later in the autumn. That's fingers crossed.
Before you became Lord Lieutenant, you're probably best known in the county of Cambridgeshire as Chief Constable of Cambridgeshire. And you were the first female Chief Constable. But I suspect when you took the role, it wasn't so much being the first female of Cambridgeshire constabulary, the boss. It was more about being a chief constable.
Yeah, for me it was, in terms of because policing is clearly a 30 to 35 year career. And when you start out as a constable, well, I actually started out as a teacher, but I didn't really like teaching very much, and I changed professions and became a police officer. But when you start off, you're trying to think where you might end up. Well, for me, I did. I wanted to go up the ranks, didn't know where I was going to end up. And you're always striving for the next level. And then finally, in Cambridgeshire, I became deputy chief constable first and then chief constable. And it was, you know, for me, it was the pinnacle of my career. But actually, it was the best job I ever had, because if people remember, it was in the aftermath of the sad deaths of Holly and Jessica. And the force wasn't doing particularly well. So to turn around the organisation and to make the people of Cambridgeshire proud of their police force was an enormous journey the fabulous officers and staff and I went on. And I think we did, you know, a great job, and we laid a good foundation for others to follow. And I really enjoyed it. It was the best 5-6 years of my whole career.
When it comes to bicycles in the police force, we do hear lots of people saying policemen should be, men and women should be out and about on their bicycles, patrolling our neighbourhoods. Is that practical?
It is. It is far more practical than walking, because at least you can get from A to B pretty quickly, which you can't always do when you are walking, although there are some areas. For example, the city centre, if you're on the city centre beat in Cambridge or the city centre beat in Peterborough, it would be far better to be walking. But if you're actually on a peripheral beat, actually using bicycles, which you often see the few PCSOs we sadly have now often out on bicycles, you can get there. When I was a young constable, I used to go and patrol the trading estates at night on a bicycle, and you were able to get much further around than ever you could if you're just walking.
I do remember actually being out on, as my photographer's role, being out with some policemen in Peterborough, and actually one of the policemen who was on a mountain bike then, a hybrid type mountain bike, he actually disappeared across a local park, and he was able to arrest somebody being chased by a policeman in a motor vehicle.
In the environment we're in now, it's no good having a public that are basically in motor vehicles being chased by police officers on bicycles. So you actually have to have a mix, actually being able to have something give you quick access into an environment or somewhere that you couldn't get a vehicle and you couldn't get a police officer walking very quickly, then you have to have something else. And so we have to have a range of methods of transport.
Now, as Her Majesty the Queen's representative in the county, the Lord Lieutenant role, you used to be able to raise your own militia. Are you able to do that now?
No, I think they stopped that in the 1920s. So we were able to raise this until the 1920s, and then quite sensibly they passed an Act of Parliament to stop us being able to do that, which I'm very pleased about, because it's not really the role of today's Lord Lieutenants. We're here in a much more encouraging and community-focused way to... I mean, the basis of the royal family is they want to have and want to support a vibrant British society. So in all the lieutenancies, what my objective is and other lieutenancies is to create and enhance and do anything we can to support the development of a countywide vibrant society. So for me, the most important thing is to have a vibrant Cambridgeshire. And clearly we have got a vibrant Cambridgeshire. We just might need to support some people as we come out of lockdown who are going to be feeling a little bit down on their uppers.
Now, here's a question you might be able to answer for us. I know for a fact that the now Earl of Wessex, when he was an undergraduate in Cambridge at Jesus College, he used a bicycle to get everywhere, between lectures, off to the sporting field, and he used to have this detective who used to cycle behind him. And I know that because quite often I used to be cycling behind the detective to see where the Duke of Earl was going, or Prince Edward, as he was then. So he was obviously a very keen cyclist. Now, I understand his wife, the Countess of Wessex, she's actually taken part in a few charity cycle rides. So I wondered, are there any other members of our royal family who cycle you could tell us about?
I'm not aware of any others. As you know, that there are several who are excellent at riding horses. And may well, I'm sure Zara Phillips probably uses a bicycle to move around stables and such like on that particular journey, and may well actually even use them at events. But I am not aware of any other usage. That doesn't mean to say they don't, but not aware of any other usage of bicycles by the royal family.
Okay, well, that's your mission for us, Lord Lieutenant, for Behind the Bike Shed. Next time, if you could just put some feelers out to let us know.
Behind the Bike Shed on Cambridge 105 Radio.
You have very kindly volunteered to play Spin That Wheel. And if you don't get to mention it during the quiz, we shall ask you very at the end about your Land's End to John O'Groats cycle ride. And this starts, it's quite simple, really. It's just 3 minutes of cycling-related questions to your daily cycling habits. And you shall know when to start because the great and wonderful Tony Barnfield, well, you'll hear him say spin that wheel, and then you shall hear the starter's gun as it goes. Okay, so stand by, Lord Lieutenant. Here we go. Spin that wheel.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Spin that wheel.
Lord Lieutenant, what was your earliest memory of cycling?
My earliest memory was in Suffolk. I was cycling along the road. I just learned to bike ride. My mum was holding the back of the seat and she let me go. I didn't know she'd let me go. I shot off, turned around to see where she was. She was no longer holding on to me and I fell into a blackberry bush. And then we spent the rest of the morning getting blackberry thorns out of me.
What type of cycling do you enjoy most? I wasn't expecting an answer, I have to say. Sorry.
Very leisurely cycling now. After my Land's End to John O'Groats experience, I am a Cambridge cyclist getting from A to B.
And Lord Lieutenant, how often do you cycle?
At the moment, I'm cycling most days because I have a static bike set up in the back garden to give me my exercise every day as we're in lockdown. But otherwise, I have become a bit more of a fair weather cyclist. When it's sunny, I will get on the bike and go into Cambridge, as opposed to when it's really wet and cold and horrible.
What sort of bicycle or bicycles do you currently own, and which one of them is your favourite, if there's more than one?
I just have a nice black bike, and I'm not sure even of the make. I'm not into makes and things of bicycles, but I do know it actually locks to anywhere that you want to lock it to from the bike, because I have lost, dare I say, or had stolen in Cambridge two bikes up until now, so I went for something even more secure, and that's despite having good locks on them.
And being the former Chief Constable of Cambridgeshire. Honestly, yep. People have no standards, do they? Now, bike, basket, saddlebag, pannier or rucksack, which is your preferred method for carrying bits on your bicycle?
Pannier and rucksack.
And what would be your perfect dream cycle ride for you? Whereabouts in the world would it be, and with whom?
It would be somewhere very flat. Having done Land's End to John O'Groats, that's the proviso. It would have to be somewhere warm, and I'm very happy to do it with my husband, although I don't think he'd perhaps want to do that sort of trip.
And what's the longest distance you have ever cycled?
Well, it was about 1,000 miles from Land's End to John O'Groats.
I knew you were going to say that, yeah. Do you prefer cycling solo or in the company of other cyclists?
Well, Land's End to John O'Groats, it was definitely solo.
Do you have a cycling hero?
No.
No? No, no reason to... No, not at all? Okay. Now, this is going to be very interesting. Which one improvement do you think would encourage more people to enjoy cycling?
As I found out when I did Land's End to John O'Groats, having a seat that was actually framed to your rear end made it much more enjoyable than when I did London to Paris and it was very unenjoyable.
So you mean a bicycle which fits, basically?
It does, a bicycle that fits.
Well, that's really good. Now, I'm going to ask you one more question. And, oh, we've run out of time. Spin well right done. Over. Congratulations, Lord Lieutenant. Now, this will probably not surprise you. You knew the answers before me, but you've got every answer right there. Now, before we go, your Land's End to John O'Groats cycle ride, which I was surprised to find was 4 years ago.
You don't necessarily have the same advantages in life that the rest of us do, or that many of us actually do. So I am passionate about that charity, and I first connected with it actually when I was in the police service and some of the things that it did. And I really felt that I wanted to support them. And they are basically... Well, they're only an Eastern Region charity, so all the money we raised goes to the Eastern Region.
Lord Lieutenant of Cambridgeshire, Julie Spence, thank you so much for finding the time to join us today. Appreciate your candid, as always, insight into everything, in this case, cycling. And for listeners who want to find out more about you, there is a really good interview, which I think you recorded end of last year, with the Women Making Waves team here, Cambridge 105. And I particularly because you are very pro encouraging women to go out there and do it. Yeah,
I am indeed. It was a really nice interview to do, but it is around trying to encourage anybody, but particularly women, to achieve their potential. Because everybody can do what they set out to do, but you just have to be prepared for some of the pushbacks that you get in life and pick yourself up, exactly as if you fall off a bicycle. Jump yourself up and get on with it.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you.
To let you know you can sponsor this programme on Cambridge 105 Radio, email sales@cambridge105.co.uk.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Behind the Bike Shed with Phil Minot on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Zooming with us today here on Behind the Bike Shed, we have Stuart Clark. He's, as I said, he's an internationally respected cybersecurity expert. Today we're chatting to him about cycling and helping to save the rhinos. Jinx St. Ledger is joining us, and she is our engineering consultant brains, and she focuses usually on heritage and industrial engineering, but she's completely obsessed with bikes, and why wouldn't you be? And of course, as I said, our friend Keith Moore, who's here as well, and hopefully he should join in this part of the programme. So before we stop to play Spin That Wheel and to listen to the Lord Lieutenant Cambridge here, who, I have to say, what an enthusiastic cyclist she is, isn't it? I mean, who would have thought someone who represents the Queen is so into... Jinx, before we went there, we were chatting about the bicycle and how sturdy it was. And you did mention, and I know it's something you're quite keen on telling the story. I mean, bicycles played a great role, didn't they, in freeing up women?
Yeah, absolutely. It was the first time a lot of women could actually travel safely and not be reliant generally on a male member of their household. So the advent of sort of the bicycle becoming a popular way of travelling is actually considered quite fundamental in sort of villages coming into contact with each other. So you had groups of people that never had access to each other before could cycle to each other. But in terms of women, historically, absolutely, you had women that could do something independently, and it was considered safe because you didn't have any sort of grasping male hands around you at the time. But I think that even goes for now. I grew up in London, and even though we have fabulous public transport in London, I was cycling from a very early age. I look back now and think, okay, I probably wouldn't do that if I was cycling London out. But it gave me some massive freedom as a teenager cycling around London, which going on public transport, I didn't necessarily feel safe.
So I'm going to interrupt you there. Why wouldn't you do it now?
I think traffic... I used to cycle on a road called the A12, which, if you think of the A14, it's kind of comparable. And I look at it now and I think, gosh, I was brave or stupid. I'm not entirely sure what the options are there. But yeah, I mean, there are other things, you know, there are other routes I could take. But certainly, I think it was probably the braveness of being a teenager. I just thought, yeah, I'm going to do this. Traffic in London has changed somewhat. I'm not ancient, obviously. But it's been a good 20 years since I was cycling around like that. And traffic has changed. However, I think in inner city London, cycling is a really good option, especially in these times. As you know, there's been a massive push to get people out on bicycles in the centre of London to stop them using public transport because of the dangers of getting infected and things like that.
So to your bike shed and your bicycles, I think last count, was it, how many did you have? Are we allowed to say? She's literally, I'm going to tell you this, she's actually literally adding, this is Keith and Stuart look really envious because she's actually seeing me adding up how many bicycles she...
Nine.
Both. Stuart and Keith, can you make nine between you, maybe?
I've got nine. They're not all serviceable, though.
Look at me.
Disappointingly got three.
Same as me. Joined the club. And one of mine is like a city sit-up-and-beg bike, so I don't care. I'm going to move on because I'm becoming bike envy here. And actually, you did tell me, Jinx, didn't you? You told me the equation of the perfect number of bicycles.
Yeah, it's N plus one. So N being the current number of bicycles that you have. And then obviously the perfect number is one more than that.
Always one more than that. Yeah, perfect.
Behind the Bike Shed on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Now, we've got a few bits of news of happening in cycling. But first of all, Keith, professional cycling. It's a little bit miserable, isn't it, at the moment?
Well, it is. I've just started the first tour this week. Was it last week? In the HTC Tour in Vietnam. It's an 18-stage race as well. So that's the first one that started. But the big boys don't start till 1st of August. I don't know whether that's going to go ahead or not, really. It's going to be interesting. Because I mean, obviously, the big worry is going to be not just the peloton, but the crowds that might turn up as well.
Because I know Stuart, along with Keith, you're very much you're quite a fan, aren't you, of the monuments, which for people who don't know what they are like the early season races in Flanders and the sort of flat parts of Holland and Belgium and France mainly, I guess. Have you missed them this year?
Yeah, I've missed cycling a lot this year. I'm not sure whether it'll be back in the summer, if I'm honest. But yeah, I've missed the monuments. But it'll be exciting if they can cram all of those tours into a couple of months with Spain, Italy and France all vowing to complete their tours. It'll be nice if it happens, but I can't see it, to be honest. I'd like to see it happen, though.
It's going to be tough to do, isn't it? Because they've got the Vuelta, the Tourmalet on the same day as the last day of the Giro, which is also the same day that they're doing Paris-Roubaix, men and women's, and that's the first time they're doing the women's Paris-Roubaix. It's all on the same day, so you won't know what to watch at that particular point. But it's going to be an exciting day in terms of cycling. But, yeah, I think the issues with COVID are just going to, I don't know, they could well come back again and bite everybody. Because the first race is the Strada Bianchi in Italy.
Yeah.
You know, and you're kind of thinking, is that going to happen the 1st of August? It's not far away now.
I just think this year has just been, it's so sad, isn't it? Because some of those races have been going on since the war continuously, haven't they? And they're such an important part of cycling culture, aren't they? In some ways, actually, the early season races are more to me about the soul of cycling than the Grand Tours have become now, as much as I love the Grand Tours from it. Jinx, do you follow any professional cycle racing?
Really, I think I'm more of a doer. I like cycling more than I like watching it. But that's just me with sport generally, I think.
You see, I prefer...
That's probably true of most cyclists. I'd sort of be out on my bike and watching it, but you still like to keep up to speed with it.
I like to talk about cycling, and I like to talk about when I do, you know, when I start my comeback season. I'm planning on it, but obviously this year I've had to put it off yet again, which is a little bit unfortunate, isn't it? It's a great shame for cycling, though, isn't it? Because it's such a, it's heartbreaking, if I'm being honest, because it's such an important part of the cycling culture for me, are the races which go with it. Forget the scandals and everything like that, it's there. But if there is racing starting the beginning of this year, by the end of the year, we do have a few races, and obviously that all depends. No one would want it to go ahead if there's a chance of, you know, spreading COVID around. That would be stupid. But if for some reason it did go ahead, could you imagine? It's going to be won. These races are going to be won by people, aren't they? People we've never heard of, some of these races.
Well, it's going to be interesting because there'll be a lot of people who are going to have at different points of their fitness. And, of course, like we were saying earlier, a lot of them use certain races to peak for the big tours, and they may not have that opportunity quite so easily this year. So, there's a potential for something different to happen. It's still going to be difficult to stop Ineos in the Grand Tours. And, of course, with the one day races, it's probably down to the kind of quick set again as well.
I'm going to change subjects quickly. Keith, I imagine you'll have an interest in this, won't you? Because you unfortunately got knocked off your bicycle quite tragically a few years ago. Chris Borman again.
You
Yep, there he goes. And we can talk about it in a minute, because obviously the viewers can't see that. The listeners can't see that. We're the viewers, aren't we? Olympic champion Chris Borben. Now, he's calling for a new law that would presume cyclists to be innocent in road accidents. Now, this has been suggested before. It's never actually happened in the UK, but it sounds like it's got some real momentum behind it at the moment. Now, apparently, Great Britain is just one of five countries remaining in Europe that still places a burden on a cyclist to prove that the driver of a motor vehicle is at fault when involved in a collision. And now this would change the law, and it would be up to the onus would be on the whoever's in control of that vehicle to prove that it was the cyclist's fault. Keith, what do you feel?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, if you're in a motorised vehicle that's weighing 2 tonnes, you have every duty to ensure that not just cyclists, but pedestrians, because they take as much flak from those vehicles as we do. And the way people operate them with using phones, changing CDs, whatever it is, there's just so many distractions in a car. And often that's what the cause is. It's just being distracted, not paying attention when they should be. And speed as well is another issue. It was a factor in the accident that I was involved in. I think it should put the liability onto the person with the greatest power of motor vehicle to actually make sure that they're driving that and operating that in a really safe and secure manner.
Now, I know it's okay for me to point this out, but of course, because I know, Keith, you've spoken about this in the past, but you've lost a leg, hadn't you, as a result of a car accident?
Yeah, I was hit by a car. He was overtaking another car, and he was doing about 70 miles an hour, and he hit me head on. So I had a traumatic amputation of the right leg below the knee. So that was the leg had actually come off in the accident. I was catapulted about 30 metres away from the accident site into a field as well, and sustained multiple other injuries as well, and had a nice four-month respite in Addenbrookes Hospital before they let me go.
But fortunately, it hasn't stopped you cycling, though, has it? Because you are annoyingly, it hasn't made you very slow either, which I find quite annoying when I go out with you, I have to say, from a personal level on that one. Now, this one here. Now, I know Stuart loves a good mountain climb. He said that earlier, didn't he? Did you guys hear this story? And Jinx, of course, madam. There is now cycling. In cycling, there's an Everest, what we call an Everesting record. Oh, yes. Which is basically you have to try and cycle up a mountain continuously. You have to go down again and start again. And the idea is you have to try to do the same total height as you would as if you were going at Everest. And anyway, German cyclist thought he'd smashed it. Emmanuel Buchmann, is that right? Is that his name? Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah, Emmanuel Buchmann. And he'd actually smashed the best ever time by 12 minutes. But unfortunately, he wasn't given the record, because what you're meant to do on the record, you're meant to do it on the same mountain, but he actually started on the other side of the mountain, went up that side a few times, and then he went across to the other side of the mountain and kept going up that mountain, and you're meant to do it on the same bit of road. So he's had that taken away from him. He must be really annoyed about that, I would imagine. And also, some rather sad news I felt. 1952, Tour of Flanders winner, Roger Deacock. He passed away this weekend. He was aged 93. I reckon that he is probably, would have to rank among one of the best sportsmen ever in any sport. And I think I'm right in saying 1951, he was the guy who basically threw away his chances of being in yellow, didn't he? And winning the tour, because the guy who was in yellow crashed down a ravine. And in those days, there wasn't wall-to-wall TV coverage, of course. And so he actually stopped by the road to make sure that the following race caravan would be able to stop to help pull this guy out. So there you go. We wish him bon voyage, don't we, as we go on our way. Now, I fixed it. There's just enough to... Oh, and the other thing, of course, James May... Top Gear guy.
All right, yes.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant, brilliant story to end on. This is how things have changed over the last few months. James May, who people may or may not know, he is one of the hosts of Top Gear, which I particularly like, and it's a great program. He has actually decided that the government, rather invest the money in HS2, should be giving every, basically, worker in the UK a bicycle. I think that's a great idea. I'm going to ask my panel, is anyone thinks that's a bad idea?
No.
There we go. Right, Stuart, there's just time for you to mention how people can help save rhinos.
Yeah, a couple of ways. Obviously, visit our website, which is helpingrhinos.org. Also, many of us cyclists love coffee. We also sell coffee, and all the proceeds go towards charity. So look out for our coffee brand, which is Horny, spelt with an I. It's actually an anagram of rhino. So, yeah, quite clever. But, yeah, by all means, visit our website, and there's lots of ways to get involved.
Okay, that's great. Now, I really want to thank my panellists today. That's Stuart, Jinx and Keith, and especially thanks to our guest on the bike, Lord Lieutenant herself, Julie Spence. Thank you so much. Next week, alongside all the latest cycling news and some other topics for you, we have another guest playing Spin That Wheel. I booked him today. It'd be a fantastic guest. Do tune in. Brilliant one.
Behind the Bike Shed on Cambridge 105 Radio.
You've been listening to Behind the Bike Shed, a Barkinghound production for Cambridge 105 Radio. The voice of Spin That Wheel was Tony Barnfield. I'm Phil Minot, and until next time, safe cycling.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bike Shed. Just to let you know, you can sponsor this program on Cambridge 105 Radio. Email sales@cambridge105.co.uk.
Behind the Bike Shed.
Cambridge 105 Radio.